British Sky Broadcasting presents The Golden Child, starring Eddie Murphy and Charles Dance, voiced by Neville Watchhurst on behalf of MCS Agency. The Paramount 75th anniversary logo appears. A colonnade of carved bronze pillars supports a vaulted gallery in which sit two long rows of saffron-robed monks. A title reads, Tibet, present day. Along a mountain pathway, a group of fearsome-looking Mongolian men on horseback transport some kind of wrought metal structure through blizzards of snow. A small, shaven-headed child in novice's robes sits smiling at a puppet show. Two robed men enter behind the boy, who gets up. The boy, dressed now in more sumptuous robes, sits atop a cushioned dais at the head of the prayer room. A man wearing the huge comb-like headdress of a Buddhist abbot approaches the dais and bows. He hands the boy a richly embroidered red silk headpiece. The boy puts it on and smiles respectfully at the man. The team of horsemen and yak drivers continue on through the snow with their burden. One of the men appears to be a bearded European of somewhat Elizabethan aspect. In the monastery, several elders look on as the boy is presented by one of them with a tray bearing several sets of prayer beads. The boy inspects them, but finally leans forward and takes the beads from around the neck of the elderly man. A ripple of approval runs through the assembled monks, and the old man backs away, smiling. A man in a pointed Tibetan hat stands guard by a group of trees on a snowy mountainside. One of the fearsome-looking horsemen launches a chain which wraps around the neck of the guard, choking him. The horsemen continue on their way, looking particularly determined and mean now. The boy is presented with a trio of dead parakeets on a tray. He applies the tip of his right index finger to one of the birds. A golden point of light glows from his finger and the bird is magically brought back to life. The monks stand and point as the brightly coloured bird flies up past a huge statue of the Buddha to a perch high up in the vault of the roof. The monastery doors burst open and the Mongolian thugs burst in and start slaying the monks. The European man appears on the threshold. The boy remains alert but motionless on the dais. The two maintain eye contact as the man stalks down the gallery towards the dais. The man stops in front of the boy and appraises him with an almost ironic gaze. He then turns and signals to two of the men to step forward bearing the metal structure. It becomes evident that the structure is a cunningly designed cage. They lower it over the boy, and as they do so, the claws of the cage tighten to form a seal at the bottom. The boy remains calm, although his face appears sad as they bear him off in his portable prison. One of the men trips and sprawls before the cage.
Don't let him touch you!
But the boy reaches forward and touches the hand of the fallen man. The man grins, exchanges looks with his fellows, and then turns his staff on the European. The European disappears, but rematerializes across the room, his expression still ironic and superior. The Mongol warriors deal with the insurgency in their own ranks, and then move out, carrying the boy in the cage. Thank you. The parakeet flaps down from its perch and away across the snow. The European follows his troop of ruffians out, stepping over the piles of murdered monks as he goes. In the doorway, he turns and gazes back at the scene of carnage before heading off out into the blizzarding snow. The outline of the Statue of Liberty, which turns out to be a miniature replica being transported in the back seat of an open-topped VW Beetle. The car is merely one small piece in the lively jigsaw of LA, made up of high buildings, milling crowds, adverts for donuts, Marlboro cigarettes, petrol. American flags flap from numerous poles. A youngish black man gets out from a car and, holding a bunch of posters and a staple gun, walks up to a telegraph pole by a street bookstall. He turns and grins, and then saunters across to stand behind a corpulent man in glasses who is perusing a magazine entitled Chunky Arses. The man appears embarrassed.
Butt Pie.
It's a sequel to a book written called
Butt Cake.
Very popular at the newsstands, but this butt with cake all over it.
The man hurries away.
Chunky Asses?
The young man sits at the wheel of his car. He casts a look out of the side window and smiles. Young women roller skate. Palm trees extend fingers upwards towards the azure sky. The Hollywood sign clings to its sandy cliff. Traffic signals flash and the freeway crawls with lane upon lane of cars. The young man, now outside a burger bar, engages in a play fight with a much beefier man. He is felled by a punch to his shoulder. He walks away, attempting to remain in jocular mood. He charms his way through the city, putting up posters as he goes. The young man now appears as a guest on a cheap TV chat show.
Welcome to Mel Backman Journal. I'm Mel Backman, and here with me today is Chandler Jarrell, who is doing something very vital to the community, or for the community, I should say, because Chandler is a finder of lost children. Am I correct?
Yes, I find missing children.
That's very interesting. You know, there was a show a couple years back called Finder of Lost Loves. Did you ever see that? Tony Franciosa, I believe, was the star of that.
Listen, I'm looking for this girl.
I hope you're not nervous, which is perfectly normal, because this is my fifth show, and I'm still nervous. In fact, is there anyone here who's not nervous? Judy, are you nervous?
Listen, I'm trying to find this girl. Her name is Cheryl Mosley. She disappeared a while back.
This is wonderful, because this is exactly what the Mel Backman Report is all about. When I first came to RST Cable, I told them I don't want to be another Merv, another Johnny. I want to do the kind of vital programming that is responsive to the community.
Listen, I'm trying to find this girl. Her name is Cheryl Moses. She's 4'11".
This is wonderful. Let's say I'm a young person. I want to get into your line of work. Is there a course I can take at a community college or?
All you have to do is care about children.
Do you recommend this line of work? Can you make a lot of money doing this?
Her name is Cheryl Mosley. She's 16.
This is a little off the subject, but you know, that's a wonderfully unique hat. Can I ask you where you got that?
She's 16 years old, and I'm trying to find her.
Great. Well, let's say you do find her. What would you say to her? What would be the first thing that would pop into your head?
She's 16 years old. Her name is Cheryl Mosley.
Thank you so much, Chandler. Now, let's talk about tortoises. Judy, what have we got here? This is great.
Oh, this is Teddy, and he's 80 years old.
80?
He's darling.
He's wonderful.
Teddy can kiss my ass. Listen, I'm trying to find this girl, okay? Her name is Cheryl Mosley. She was last seen on Vineland down in North Hollywood. She had on a sweater and a skirt. I'd appreciate it if you contacted me at 468-8492. If you have any...
Thank you, Chandler.
No, shut up, man. If you have any information that leads to the finding of this girl, I'd appreciate it if you contacted me. Yo, hey, if you don't put the camera. I'll bust your ass, man. Leave the camera on me. Cheryl Mosley, Chandler Gerald, 24 hours a day, 468-8492. Now you can talk about whatever you want to talk about with the tortoises and whatever. Excuse me.
Thank you. Thank you. That was Chandler Gerald. Well, I understand that you've had a sex change.
That's correct.
Watching the TV and making notes is a beautiful young Oriental woman. An ancient scroll lies on the table. Chandler now hangs loose on the basketball pitch with a group of young protégés.
Okay, now, let's go. Take it slow now. I'm tired. Yo, what y'all hanging in the back of the spot for? Man, almost made it. All right, let's go. All right, hit on. There you go. All the way, boy. It's you. Yes! All right. Come on, now. Yo, man, what's wrong with you? Scrub? You just made you a scrub. Scrub?
Chandler goes to fetch the ball, which has landed by the feet of the beautiful young woman.
Good afternoon, Mr. Gerald.
Hi.
So you're the finder of lost children.
Oh, you must have saw me on television. Yeah, I like working with children.
Hey, Chandler, come on, are you okay?
Shut up!
A child has been kidnapped.
When?
5 days ago in northeastern Tibet.
Well, Tibet's a little bit out of my territory.
This child is special, Mr. Gerald. His destiny is to save the world.
That's a good destiny.
Hey, Chandler, throw the ball!
Here!
400 years ago, the New Chong Oracle predicted that the Gompantama, that is Tibetan for Golden Child, would be taken to the new city, the city of the angels, and would be rescued by a man who is no angel.
And who's that?
You, Mr. Gerald.
Yeah, right. Okay. I'm in the middle of a basketball game, although I'd love to stay and chat with you.
Off the scroll.
This looks like a big joint.
I'm serious, Mr. Gerald.
You lick it and smoke it. I think it was two of these, and you smoked the other one. Just put it in your bag and stop smoking scrolls. You know, it looks like a joint, and you might get jumped by some Rastafarians walking around with this, so put it away. Excuse me, I have a game to play. It's my song.
I realize it's very hard for you to take in, but it's your destiny to find the Golden Child.
And it's your destiny to seek some serious psychiatric help. Really, excuse me, can I go play now? Please, go home? Excuse me. And such a cute girl, too. Dope fiend.
Chandler stands at a murder scene.
That her?
Yeah, that's Cheryl Mosley.
How long she been missing?
About 3 weeks. What do you got?
Not much. 3 days ago, the rental sign goes down and a white truck backs over the lawn right up to the front door. The neighbors hear this continual low murmur night and day. Then at 10 o'clock last night, the white truck pulls up again and the murmuring stops.
One of the neighbors comes out to shut up his dog who won't come down the hill. Looks over the fence, finds a body.
Chandler has photographed a dragon tattoo on the girl's skin. They now stand in a house daubed all over with strange writing.
Who rented the place?
She did. By phone, mail and cash. Did you take that referral I sent you?
Nope.
You only take the kid cases, don't you?
Yep.
Listen, give
me
a few more shots.
Chandler walks by himself into a side room. Looking out through the window, he spots the young woman bowing to him on the other side of the yellow police incident tape. He crosses to the stove. Seeing what appears to be a pot of porridge, he hurriedly grabs a utensil and breaks the surface. Through the glutinous porridge, red liquid bubbles up. He photographs the contents of the pan. Pulling up outside a tattoo parlor now, Chandler gets out of his car. The young woman observes him from a car parked across the way. Chandler emerges from the tattoo parlor holding something in his hand. He hesitates on the threshold of another tattoo parlor. Turning, he spots the young woman's car parked down an alley. He emerges from the tattoo parlor and crosses the road. Arriving at her car, he finds she is no longer in the driver's seat.
Okay, Mr. Betts, you can come out now. Stop following me around. I'm not going to take your case.
You're already on it.
Look, what makes you think the kid was in the house?
This is a restraint curse. They must restrain him both spiritually and physically. They need to keep evil on all four sides of him at all times. Just the writing wouldn't be enough, though. They'd need to augment it with something else.
Or what?
Or the child will project himself astrally.
Give me a break.
Something in her seriousness gives him pause.
So you're telling me that the people that killed Cheryl, if I find them, they're the same people that kidnapped the golden kid.
Exactly, yes.
Right. But why would they kill Cheryl?
I don't know.
And why are they feeding the kid blood?
Are you sure?
I found a bowl of oatmeal.
Yes.
With some blood in the bottom of it, and it's probably hers.
I don't know. There is something we could ask about the blood.
This is L.A., though. You gonna ask somebody about the blood? Are they in this world? Or do we have to project there? Some part of the galaxy.
Chandler and the young woman enter what looks like a Chinese pharmacy. In the back, a man lies on a treatment table.
Oh, Mr. Jero, you honor my shop with your presence. He says he's very pleased to meet a man as great as you.
Oh, how do you say thank you?
Dodge.
Dodge time.
Chandler bemusedly accepts the Chinese patient's effusions, then extricates himself and follows the pharmacist and the young woman down into a cellar.
Mr. Chiu.
Chandler looks somewhat disbelievingly at a screen behind which sits a young woman smoking.
You may speak with her. She can hear you.
Tell me about the golden child.
Every 1,000 generations, a perfect child is born. A golden child. He has come to rescue us.
Rescue us from what?
From ourselves.
Ah.
He is the bringer of compassion. If he dies, compassion will die with him.
So if something happens to the kid, the whole world goes to hell?
The world will become hell.
Ah. Not far from that now. Listen, who would want to take the kid anyway?
Those who want evil rather than good.
Can you be a little bit more specific?
We do not know who took him.
Well, could you tell me why the people that took him are trying to make him eat blood?
Nothing in this world will hurt him. But if he were to pollute himself with anything impure, he would become vulnerable.
Okay, so if he eats the blood, they could kill him?
Yes.
Oh.
Do you have any other questions?
As a matter of fact, I do. What are you doing this weekend because your silhouette is kicking? She plays the maracas too?
This is the chosen one.
Yes.
You people certainly do put on a good show. Where'd you find her at?
She is the librarian of the secret repository at Palcosin. She was flown here to help us. She's over 300 years old.
And how she managed that one?
One of her ancestors was raped by a dragon.
Does that happen a lot where you're from?
The young woman's car crests a hill in nighttime LA and then pulls to a halt.
Look, I'm sorry I got a little harsh. Why don't you come up for a while?
No, thank you.
Oh. Ah.
What is it?
The spirits. The spirits. The spirits just told me that you should come up for a little while and have a drink and wait for further instructions. Look, I'm sorry. Well, I'm sorry. Why don't you come up for a while? I'll be good. Okay. I tried. You know, they say you should always give a woman two chances to say no just in case.
That's no, twice.
All right. But the spirits are going to be very upset. You know, I am the chosen one.
Chandler's wide-eyed mime of one possessed almost wins her over, but the smile is short-lived, and he can see that the answer is still no.
Okay.
She sinks back in the car seat. Chandler, in his apartment, lies down on a couch. On top of a grim-looking building, one of the Mongol kidnappers stands guard in the darkness. In a vast room, the golden child sits in his cage, surrounded by symbols chalked onto the floor, and numerous men, some simply on guard, others with black-smeared faces who seem to be intoning curses. One of the uglier of the guards picks up a stone and prepares to catapult it at the boy, who remains utterly serene and simply raises the palm of his right hand. The stone is deflected by an unseen force and ricochets to the rear of the room. The guard gets up defiantly and goes to fetch an oil drum from across the room. Crouching behind it, he looses off another stone and ducks. The boy calmly deflects this second stone. A Pepsi can jumps out of the oil drum and rolls across the room towards the cage. The boy holds it with his gaze. The can upends itself. The man points in delight as the can crushes itself, unrumples itself, and then tears and folds itself into the form of a small cartoon man. The Tin Man begins to tap dance to the stunned hilarity of the guard. The boy allows himself a muted but beautiful smile. The Tin Man is obliterated by the polished black shoe of the bearded European leader of the gang.
You will eat.
He hands the Tin Man to the guard.
Get this and the rest of your playthings out of here.
The boy seems to be focusing his attention on the bowl of porridge sitting on the floor some way off. He folds his hands in prayer. The bowl tips over. As the guard continues clearing up his stuff, the boy pulls from his pocket a sprig of green leaves, of which he eats one. Chandler, in his apartment, lies restlessly on his couch. Out in the car, the young woman is equally restless. In the cage, the boy turns his attentions on the men chanting curses. One of them nods off and falls sideways. The boy focuses his full attention ahead of him. In his apartment, Chandler notices a glow from behind his window blinds. He gets up urgently and crosses to the window. Opening the blind, he shades his eyes with his hand and squints into the glare. The boy appears as if floating in space and releases from his left hand the colourful parakeet. The garden below the window is now bathed in normal dawn light. In the bough of a tree sits the parakeet.
Hey, bird! Did you just see a little Hare Krishna midget in a tree, floating? Or is it me? It must be Rod Serling. Yeah.
You the guy on TV looking for Cheryl Moseley?
Yeah.
Well, I know the bastards who grabbed her.
Okay, who is she with?
Have you ever been in Pacoima?
Yeah, who is she with, though?
Behind the freeway, there's a house. It's a pad for some bikers called the Yellow Dragons. She was with them last week, but she ain't there now.
Okay, who is this? Hello?
A gang of Hell's Angels power along an LA street. Chandler and the young woman follow in a car. The bikers pull up by a shabby building. Chandler pulls up, spotting as he does so the parakeet.
What is it?
Nothing. Look, I came prepared in case we had any other eventualities. Listen, you wait here. If there's a problem, you leave. Now, what are you going to do?
I'll stay here.
No, you stay here now. But if there's a problem, you get behind the wheel, drive away. Understand me? Okay?
Okay.
You got that?
Yes.
Stay, leave. Okay.
Chandler, gun in hand, saunters away from the car and peers over the top of a breeze-block wall towards where the bikes are parked. Chandler prepares to climb the wall. Just on the other side of it, a man of Hispanic appearance cooks at a barbecue on a scrubby patch of ground. Chandler jumps over, confronting the man's whole family.
I'm not gonna hurt anybody. I don't want no trouble. No trouble. I just want some chips. I want some chips, that's all. All I want some chips. See, the chip, that's it. Turn that over, man, it's burning. It's burning, turn it over, it's burning. I just want some chips.
Advancing towards the biker's hideout, Chandler picks his way past a wrecked car. Inside, the bikers watch a heavy metal video. The young woman follows Chandler, vaulting over a high wall and landing stylishly. Chandler cautiously enters the building. He prepares to talk to the bikers, but one of their number is on his trail.
Hey, man, you boys, a couple of questions.
Chandler is jumped from behind. The young woman cautiously approaches the building. Finding the door locked, she pulls out a hairpin and picks the lock. She enters the house and looks around at the squalor and the graffiti of a dragon on the wall. The bikers finish tying Chandler's hands.
That'll hold him. Yeah, that ought to hold him.
Hey. In my pocket, it's a whole thing of Tic Tacs. Take as many as you like, please.
The young woman advancing through the house is confronted by a large, hairy biker. She deftly dispatches the burly man and walks on. The drunken coffer staggers out from a doorway. She backs away. He smashes his beer bottle. She spots a metal pipe through a hole in the ceiling, leaps up, and swinging from it, kicks him right through a plasterboard wall, smashing water pipes and fortuitously soaking her shirt. Chandler peers towards her as she moves slowly forward. She pauses. Behind a door lurks a biker with a large steel spanner. She kicks the door in, crushing the man beneath it. She reaches Chandler and unties him.
What are you doing here? Hey!
She looks on inscrutably as Chandler sees off biker after biker, showing scant respect for the Queensbury rules.
Put your brain, asshole!
Between them, they vanquish the entire gang, sending the last of them crashing into a picket fence on his own bike.
Why'd you come in here? Didn't I tell you not to come in? I told you to stay in the car. I'm not going to lecture you. I'm not going to turn this into a lecture. But next time I tell you to do something, you do it, all right? This is a man thing. Man shit happened here. You're not supposed to. This is no place for a woman to be. You understand me? But next time I tell you to do something, do it. I don't want you to get hurt. This is, okay, can I just handle this, okay?
Okay.
Leave me alone, asshole.
You guys had a girl tattooed with a yellow dragon a couple of days ago. What happened to her?
What girl?
Chandler pulls out a photo and holds it up.
I never seen her before.
Okay.
Ah! Oh, Cheryl. Yeah, her. We sold her.
What do you mean you sold? You sold it to who?
To Tommy Tong. He got that restaurant down on Broadway. And we traded her a case of cigarettes and a quart of pork fried rice.
Why would somebody want to buy somebody?
He needed a girl.
For what?
He worked the steel out with the devil. Said he needed her blood. Hey, look, look. You're gonna go over there and rough him up or anything, huh? Don't tell him I told you.
Oh, I don't want to do that. Why would I do that? So let me get this right. Hey, you sold her.
Yeah, we sold her.
Chandler vents his righteous anger with a right hook to the biker's jaw. Chandler and the young woman pull up downtown in their car.
Wait here.
Chandler walks off along the pavement, casting a look back at the young woman. He enters a Chinese restaurant. Inside, groups of men sit at tables drinking tea.
I'm looking for Tommy Tom. Look, stop acting stupid. The man owns the place, all right? I'm looking for Tommy
Tom.
Oh, you don't speak English? Let me translate it for you. Bring Tommy Tong out here or I'm gonna bust your ass. You understand that? Huh? Listen, you see this dead girl? The last time she was seen alive was with Tong. Now you tell Mr. Tong he has a guest, I'm gonna bust your ass.
A wild-eyed Chinese man emerges from the rear of the restaurant wielding a pair of scary and very sharp fighting axes.
You should have a feel about that karate shit, okay?
The man slices through the broomstick Chandler has grabbed. The young woman appears, backflips across the restaurant and gets the Chinese man in an arm lock. The man then runs off in terror.
How'd you do that? What was that with the flip?
Chandler and the young woman emerge from the rear of the restaurant and give chase to the Chinese man. The man, however, emerges triumphantly from behind a large garbage trolley. A rat appears and morphs into the diabolical figure of the bearded Englishman, who grabs one of the axes from him and aims a fatal blow at the Chinese man's head before resuming the shape of the rat once more. Chandler backtracks along the alley, finding the body of the Chinese man. The young woman catches up with him.
You killed him?
I didn't kill him.
What happened?
I don't know. Maybe the guy cut himself shaving and bled to death looking for a Kleenex. I don't know. Maybe the guy thought that I was coming and got scared and figured what the hell and killed himself. You buy that?
No.
Neither do I.
I think I should tell you we may be up against supernatural creatures.
Like what?
Demons.
The bearded Englishman stalks back into the room where the golden child sits caged.
By the time he finds you, it will be too late.
The sinister man unlocks a trunk, unrolls a runner of Persian carpet, and kneels in meditative pose, breathing deeply. The bricks of the walls cascade away, revealing what seem to be the fires of hell.
You were wise to kill Tommy Tong. He was weak. He might have betrayed us.
Thank you, Lord.
But why is the child still alive?
You have no reason to fear him. He is surrounded at all times and in all the four directions by evil.
Do not underestimate the power of good, and do not dismiss the strength of the child. Time grows short. The child will never eat the blood.
What must I do?
Move the child before the Chosen One draws near.
And to kill him?
The Ajanti dagger. It is not of this world. With it you could kill the child.
But Lord, it is so well guarded. How can I...
Offer to exchange the child for it. They can refuse nothing for his safe return. Use the Ajanti dagger. With it, you need no other evil. Use the dagger to kill the child.
Chandler climbs a flight of steps up to the street containing his apartment. In his bedroom now, he props a pillow against his headboard and lies down. He looks pensive. Outside, the young woman dozes in her parked car. Chandler's eyelids droop. The sinister bearded man stands staring down. Chandler's eyes open wide and he sits bolt upright in a satin-covered bed in a panelled room. A huge flower arrangement and a pair of chandeliers adorn the bedhead. Chandler gets up and gazes around him as he makes slowly for the door. In the wood-panelled corridor, a sleek white horse ambles slowly past him. He turns, bemused, to look at the animal. Moving onwards through an elegantly furnished hallway, he stops to look in a gilt-framed mirror. It casts no reflection of himself, but he sees in it the bearded man standing at the other side of the room. He turns sharply, but what he sees now is a large window overlooking the Eiffel Tower. A door slides open, and out step the bearded man and the ugly guard, now dressed in a top hat and white tux. Two more of the strange gang appear and hedge Chandler in.
It's good to see you, Mr. Yarrow.
Get your monkey, off my back.
A red applause light flashes.
Of course. Foo, please, retire.
Yeah, Foo, save it. Wait a second, this is a dream. I'm dreaming! Hey!
Why'd you say that, Mr. Yarrow?
Because people like Foo with his monkey face and the big head guy and the fat dude and you don't exist for real. This is a dream.
Perhaps I've had you brought here to make you a very attractive offer.
Well, I don't think I can accept a proposal this early in the season.
A large studio audience has now appeared.
Thank you.
Has it ever occurred to you how many men of less worth than yourself obtain so many of life's rewards, while you, who can imagine so much, have so very little?
I can't say that it has. I'm not that lucky. I don't have that much of imagination.
Chandler borrows the ugly guard's silver-tipped cane and passes through to sit down at a table within the side room.
I really don't like your attitude.
You know, this is a nice jacket. It's a Morris Day feel, and it looks good on you in the boots. It's smoking.
I'll repeat my offer one last time.
Well, I am dreaming, so I can pretty much say anything and get away with it. So I think I'll say, from my heart, kiss my ass. Kiss my ass!
I can see that it's pointless talking to you, Mr. Yarrow.
Why do you insist on mispronouncing my name, leaving the J silent? My name is Gerald with a J.
Yes, I know.
You know, my legs are much more attractive.
I'm willing to make an exchange. I will trade the child for the Ayanti dagger.
Chandler's face registers blank incomprehension. The man approaches and runs his finger along Chandler's exposed forearm.
Hey.
This is just a reminder of the evening. Something so that you'll know you were here.
You're not supposed to feel pain in your dream.
You're going to remember this evening for a very long time. Excuse me for a moment. I'll be right back.
Do you have any methylate or mercuricome? Because this might get infected.
Tell your friends that Sardo Numspa sends his greeting.
Chandler is left with a horrible wound on his forearm. He smiles quizzically at the ugly guard and, using the man's own cane, pushes an elaborately carved jade figurine towards the edge of the table. The ugly guard looks on, then kneels to catch it.
It's a mistake.
He kicks the guard in the face.
Key!
Chandler!
He tied you up in toilet paper.
What are you doing here?
Well, I have to be here. It's my dream. But listen, I think the kid is here somewhere. I think we should find the kid together, right?
Yes.
And then afterwards, I was thinking maybe we could, like,
spend some time together.
Yeah, some time together. Kind of let nature
take its course.
Yeah.
Looking on now are Sardo Numspa and his strange gang. Fu appears in the doorway and swings his chain lasso at Chandler's ankles, felling him. The ugly guard has joined in now, and Chandler, now prone on the floor, has to roll one way then the other to avoid a rain of vicious axe strokes. Finally, Chandler jerks awake in his own bed. He sits there panting and collecting his thoughts for a few moments and then looks at his forearm, which still bears the scar from his dream, back in the pharmacist's cellar.
It is Sardo Numspa.
What's this knife?
A crossed dagger of Ajanti. He brought it to this world to kill the second golden child. The bearer of justice. His death was a great loss.
Sardo needs it to kill the child, but you can only use it to save him.
You must obtain the knife and lure Numspa into freeing the child. But you must never let him get possession of the knife.
Well, this sounds like a pretty neat trick, but how am I supposed to pull it off?
The seer merely blows a lavish plume of smoke.
If need be, we will exchange the dagger for the child.
If the abbot had calmer time, let us have it.
Wait a second. If the kid's so important, why doesn't this guy just give you the dagger?
He is a very difficult man. Tomorrow, you will go with Kinang to Tibet to obtain the dagger.
Hey, man, I ain't going to no Tibet just because I had a crazy dream. This is going to be ridiculous.
Only the chosen one can obtain the knife.
Will you go?
Listen, this chosen one thing, it's going too far now, okay? This is not normal, okay? I'm not saying no, but I have to think this over because the chosen one thing, too far.
Could you please leave us for a moment?
Yes, y'all talk it over, because this is not a normal thing, and it should be discussed, because it's not normal. Talk. Chosen one. I'm the chosen one. Why? Tibet. Why can't somebody choose me to go to the Bahamas? I got to get chosen to go to Tibet. This is really... Nkala, you're not a normal chick. You're too shy and need to open up. You can't sit in this basement naked, smoking cigarettes, looking at soap operas for the rest of your life.
Chandler emerges into the shop upstairs. An elderly Chinese woman is paying the shopkeeper for her purchases and looks across curiously at Chandler. He stops by a display cabinet and looks at a pile of what might be shards of slate. He picks one up and puts it to his nose.
Yak loin.
What is it?
Yak loin. Good to keep the yang up.
Ain't nothing wrong with my yang.
Chandler walks along a street with Key.
Tell me how this dream transmission thing works.
Parts dream and parts real.
Okay, so the Sky Mom is real?
Right.
Well, what about Numsi?
Numspa. Sado Numspa.
Yes.
He's very real.
Now, you were there and you said some things that seemed pretty real.
That part was dream.
I was just checking.
It is dark. Key's car crests the hill and pulls up in front of Chandler's flat.
Aren't you going to ask me up?
Am I dreaming now?
Does a lady have to ask twice?
No. No, please. No, please, twice. Please, please. Shit. Twice.
The screen goes black. It is now morning.
Hey! I don't know whether or not you wanted cream and sugar, so I left the coffee black.
I want you to go to Tibet. Will you go?
Wait a second. Now, look, I hear it's really cold in Tibet, and I don't like the cold. Why don't we just stay here? Me and you stay here all weekend long, under the covers and watching television and sweating and smiling and everything.
You won't go?
It's freezing in Tibet. Hey, where you going?
Tibet.
But I'm the chosen one. Me, you can't get the knife.
She throws him a look of arch significance.
I'll go. I'll go to Tibet. Wait. But if it's really cold, you gotta come back here, okay? You're not in a rush to leave like this minute, are you? Because, you know...
He does an elaborate pantomime with his eyes towards the bed. She looks down demurely.
A bed? Is that a bed?
A plane overflies the crystalline peaks of the Himalayas. The cabin of the plane is less than pristine. Even the slatternly stewardess has a fag hanging from her lower lip. Chandler, seated next to Key, looks uncomfortable. He puts on the in-flight headphones. The sitar music does not appear to be to his taste. Sado Numspa oversees the loading of the cage into the hold of a lorry. The child sits impassively in his prison and surreptitiously picks and eats what seems to be his last but one leaf. Chandler and Key, dressed in local costume, cross a crowded square.
Kathmandu is the gateway to Tibet.
There's bulls and shit walking around here. It's cold.
2 days into the mountains and we will be at the heights of heaven.
Well, I thought this was the best part of it. Look, I'm freezing and I'm not enjoying myself. But I want you to know that I'm going to do my best to try to find this golden child for you.
Of course you are.
You know...
I'll arrange for our trek into the mountains. We have about an hour to look around.
Key marches off, scattering a dense flock of pigeons. Chandler walks off across the square. The parakeet perches above his head, then flies off as if in pursuit. Chandler looks thoughtful as he surveys the primitive lifestyles around him. He catches sight of a young boy with an old face. Looking up, he spots the parakeet.
Hey, where are you? Where are you from?
About 4:30, but I don't think I'm going to be able to make it to the party.
The stranger moves on. Chandler follows the parakeet down a side alley. He stops by a young woman winnowing a pile of wheat on the cobbles. A legless beggar sits holding out his bowl among a pile of straw.
Pasi. Pasi, Pasi, Dina. Pasi, Dina. Pasi, Dina. Pasi, Dina.
Chandler's face softens and he kneels down by the old man.
Hi. Take it easy.
Well, you want me to buy one of your necklaces? Okay, I'll buy one. I'll buy one. Okay, let me have the blue one. All right, how much is one? I don't know what it, how much they cost, though. One of those? Okay. Let me have the blue one. It matches my coat.
The old man slips a necklace over Chandler's head, helping himself to a banknote from Chandler's wad.
Hey, wait a second. You took 100. You took the 100. No, that's no. See, the $1. See, $1 for you. See, the George Washington? That's Benjamin Franklin. That's not happening. Give this. You got the wrong money. Can I have my money back? And you gave me the wrong necklace, too.
You're breaking my heart, asswipe.
Well, you speak English just fine.
So do you, so what of it?
Hey, listen, man. Give me my 100 back. Take this dollar and take this, give me the right one.
Monkey breath, puke face, eater of turtle slime.
Okay, tell you what, just give me my shit, you take your shit.
What, Scotch Pocket?
Okay, you slick shithead. You sneaky little bastard.
You want your money? Take it!
Chandler pulls the man up, revealing that he has two perfectly good legs. The man magically disappears, leaving Chandler clutching two handfuls of clothes. He looks up to see the parakeet launching itself off the top of a building. He meets up with Key.
Did you see a little naked man running around with a $100 bill?
I've arranged for yachts, ponies, and boats.
You didn't see a little naked bum with $100?
No, I could arrange for one.
Come on. You got to show up sooner or later. And when you do, your ass is kicked. And I'm going to sell your clothes. Leave you in Kathmandu, naked and bleeding with no money. You little dirty bastard. You took my money from me.
The pair cross a stunningly beautiful lake in a small boat.
If that bum didn't take my $100 because I don't got a boat with a motor.
Shut up and paddle.
Yeah, I'm a paddle. I'm a paddle his ass when I'm a paddle your ass when I find you. I know you. I'm going to use this rope. I'm going to roll your ass till it bleeds.
Snow-covered mountains soar majestically. A plume of windblown snow spirals hundreds of meters above one of the peaks. The pair, accompanied by Tibetan porters, ride along a ridge marked out with strings of prayer flags.
Be there soon!
Yeah, we better have a bachelor when we're going! Because my ass is frozen to this yak!
A country house in bright sunshine. Inside a large hall, the cage containing the golden child stands surrounded by candles and daubed curses. The child pops a leaf into his mouth and chews. The yak train battles on through the blizzard towards a monastery building perched above a precipice. Into the prayer room step Key and Chandler, who stamps snow from his boots. The monks carry on almost unperturbed. The abbot, who is ringing a large singing bowl, is indeed the legless beggar from Kathmandu. The monks cast him sidelong glances.
We have come to ask for the sacred cross dagger of Ajanti.
For what reason?
For the golden child.
He does not need it.
To save his life.
The child lives for our sakes, not for his own.
I humbly beg you, let us have the knife.
Let him ask it.
Chandler looks around. The monks look at him. Key looks at him. He pauses and then, ironically scratching DJ style with a prayer wheel, says,
I said, I want the knife.
Chandler laughs at his own joke. The abbot fixes him with a stare and points at him.
Let him ask again.
Chandler hesitates, then laboriously returns to the prayer wheel and gives it a proper spin.
I want the knife. Please.
Key gives him a blank look. The abbot gets down from his dais and walks to within a few feet of Chandler.
Only a man whose heart is pure can wield a knife. And if you're such a man, you will have it.
Only a man whose heart is pure can wield the knife. And only a man whose ass is narrow can get down these steps. And if mine is such an ass, then I shall have it.
He joins Key and the abbot in a candlelit chamber.
Oh, shit.
Beyond the door is a corridor. At the other end is the sacred Ajante dagger. If you walk to the other end of the corridor and retrieve it, the dagger is yours.
Okay, that sounds simple enough.
Just one thing. You must carry this glass of water without spilling one drop.
Who are you, Monty Hall now? You must be Carol Merrill. Don't spill any water. This is crazy.
And keep your thought as pure as the water.
Yeah, this water ain't really that pure.
Neither are you. I give you this advice. Stay on the path.
You got it. I'm so afraid of the dark, too.
As Chandler disappears through the doorway, Key and the abbot exchange a look. Chandler, holding the glass of water, passes through a dark corridor. He stops at an archway festooned with cobwebs.
You need to get somebody to come clean up down here!
He gently tears through the web and emerges into a chamber set around with candles.
This is a piece of cake.
This is a piece of cake, okay?
He steps onto what looks like a vertical section of tree trunk. He stops, realizing that the entire floor of the cavern is made up of widely spaced tree trunk sections, and that the drop between them seems bottomless.
Hey, there's no floor. There's no ground.
Wait a minute, I got... There's a ground! You're making it look like it's no ground! You see, if I'm gonna be scared, cause it run back and say, there's a ground! There's a ground, Monty!
He triumphantly pulls out a coin and flips it into the chasm. His confident expression evaporates as he listens for the coin's landing.
There's no ground here!
Oh, shit.
Grim-faced, he steps onto the next tree trunk. The knife is suspended over a brazier of licking flames. A rope bridge sways.
Remember, stay on the path!
I heard you the first time! Let's just hope the path stays under me!
He steps onto the rope bridge. His foot goes through a rickety board and he slips, managing to cover the water glass with the palm of his hand. He gets up and crosses the bridge, stepping back onto more tree trunk tops. Behind him, the bridge explodes in a ball of flame and plummets down into the abyss. Chandler looks round, horrified.
I thought you said I was supposed to stay on the path!
Yes! But you must know when to break the rules.
Well, how many people have survived this test?
None.
None. None. I'm gonna break your ass when I get out of here.
The next but one trunk seems much lower down. He steps on the next one, which under his weight sinks down at speed. He manages to get a finger hold on the next trunk, placing the still unspilt water on a trunk to his left. He pulls himself up to safety. Wiping his brow, he reflexively goes to take a drink from the glass, stopping himself just in time. Reaching the stone trough of flame, he extends his hand towards the suspended knife. As he does so, the flames flare up alarmingly, making him pull back.
What am I doing wrong? I followed all your rules. What am I doing wrong?
Keep your mind as pure, thoughts as pure as the water. And don't drop the water. Don't drop the water. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. The water. Fire in the water. Okay.
Tumanti! A toast!
As Chandler downs the entire glass of water, the flames subside and then extinguish themselves in a hiss of steam. He reaches out and grabs the knife.
Turn on the goddamn light!
Nighttime. The abbot stands looking out from a veranda in the monastery. He turns to see Chandler appearing, trussed up in his Tibetan coat and rubbing his hands against the cold.
What is it, ass wife?
Does no one ask your advice about something? I'm gonna let that slide because I understand it's your way. Don't press your luck, though. I know that you're very old and wise and disgusting guy. And it's gonna wipe that right on your jacket, huh? Well, I was wondering what a man says to a woman from your world when he wants to make her understand that he loves her and he wants to marry her.
If you took the short path and reach enlightenment before tomorrow, who would want you for a husband?
What's the short path?
First of all, you must remain pure.
What are you talking about, pure? What do you mean?
You know what I mean.
Oh, you mean, Is there a long way?
It takes 10,000 lifetimes.
Well, we don't have that much time, do we? No women. What else?
For you? You must trust someone you have no reason to trust. You must make a promise to someone you have just met. And you must love someone who loves you.
Look, how am I supposed to know when to do all these things anyway?
That's for you to decide. You must tell no one I have put you on the path.
Thanks for your help.
Thinks I helped him.
Get that bug off your jacket before it freeze up and scratch yourself. You can keep that 100 because there's no telling what might be on the bill when you give it back.
The abbot wraps himself in his cloak and descends the steps into the snowy yard where Key sits observing the distant peaks.
Gompa, I have ruined myself for the American. He is a fool.
He's brave.
He's irresponsible.
He's generous.
He thinks of nothing but protecting his own feelings.
But if you touch his heart, there's nothing he wouldn't do for you.
He believes in nothing.
And still he does what is right.
He's a careless, thoughtless, undisciplined fool.
I do like him very much. It's very hard not to. Those magnificent Americans. So much power and so little understanding what to do with it.
What should I do?
You must help him save the golden child and follow your heart.
Thank you, Compa.
You're welcome, daughter. And when you want to marry him, you have my blessing.
Thank you, Father.
She smiles and leans in to the old man. At Kathmandu Airport.
They're not going to let me on the plane with this 2-foot knife.
Yes, they will.
No, they won't. I'm going to jail.
Thank you.
This is not gonna work, and I'm gonna spend the rest of my life in a clay cell in Kathmandu. Another cab?
This is Kathmandu. What'd you expect?
Listen, there's no way they're gonna let me on a plane with a 2-foot knife under my shirt.
Relax and just trust in your destiny. Come on.
You trust in your destiny.
Come with me, please. But necessary.
See?
For your own protection.
Oh, these are just my drawers. That's my clean ones. And these are dirty ones.
Excuse me, have a plane to catch?
Come on, hurry up. Plane, get out of here.
What's this? Stuff.
Look, just once I want to go back
to
America. I'm a citizen, okay?
What's this?
What are you looking at?
It just does my heart good to see another American citizen.
He has slipped the knife into the man's pocket.
Hold it right there! No, I'm not crazy. I'm Agent Chandler Gerald from the American Stolen Artifacts Foundation. Everybody, it's okay. I'm the Artifacts Stolen Artifacts Foundation man. Freddy, get out of my sight. You make me sick, Freddy. I'll talk to you on the plane, Freddy. Nobody be alarmed. I'm Chandler Gerald, American Stolen Artifacts Founders of America. And thanks to you, we were able to catch this man, Freddy, the piece of shit back there. And I thank you, and I thank the good people of Nepal. A bunch of brilliant fuckers, all of you. I thank you, sir. You are one hell of a leader, because you, the keen, the cunningness, the instinct is brilliant. And I can tell you trained under this man, because you have the same glare in your eye of brilliance. And you don't even know what you did, but you're brilliant anyway, because the best brilliance is born not from someone ignorant. Forget it. This is my assistant, Kinang here, and we thank you all. It's Agent 69, and we thank you all. The people of Nepal, we thank you. You're a bunch of beautiful, brilliant people. Nepal! N-E-P-A-L! Viva Nepal! Viva Nepal!
On the plane, the pair grimace somewhat at the arrival of their meals. A woman across the aisle offers Chandler a squid. Chandler quietly declines. Then a dried fish. Again, he mouths no thank you. Chandler slips on his headphones and this time seems to be getting quite into it.
Welcome back.
Thank
May
you.
I help you?
Hey, this is your problem now.
Thank you. You did a marvelous job in obtaining the knife.
Sado Numspa looks on.
You will be spending the next few days at a house of a certain friend.
When do you think we'll be contacted about the knife?
Chandler clocks Sado Numspa, who is surrounded by police officers.
That's the man, Chandler Yarrow. If he doesn't return my property, I want him arrested. Welcome home, Mr. Yarrow. You have something for me.
I'm sorry, Numsi. I should be punished. Everyone I have stolen from my brother, Numsi. Officer, it is your duty to take me in. Please, purge me. I'm ashamed of myself. I should be arrested. I should be purged. I should be flogged. I don't deserve to walk amongst good, clean people.
Let me have a word with him for
a
moment.
But I'm a swine. I am a wretch. I don't deserve to live like others.
How long do you think you can keep up this miserable masquerade?
Well, until I get arrested, or until you realize the rules of evidence in this country. See, if I get arrested, they take me and they put me in a jail cell. And then they take the knife because it's a stolen object. And they put that little room and they put Exhibit A, a little sticker says Exhibit A on it. And that sits in the room. Then I sit in my little room and the knife sits in this little room until the trial comes up, which can be anywhere from a month to a year. So if you get me arrested, there's no telling when you're going to get your knife.
Chandler bats his eyelids in mock innocence.
You've no idea who I am, have you?
Yes. You're Sado Numsi.
Look, I don't care who you are. I do care that you kidnapped a little kid, though.
I could destroy you just like that.
Well, we wouldn't want that. Listen, bring me the boy, and I'll give you the knife. And then no one will have to be destroyed just like that. Think it over.
My brother's forgiven me!
Ki, Dr. Hong, Brother Noomsi has forgiven me. Dear brother, thank you, thank you, thank you. Mwah, you're wonderful.
Just what else did you tell him?
I told him next time I saw him I wasn't going to be as polite.
You are foolhardy, aren't you?
Well, I do my best.
A Mercedes glides up a drive to an isolated, luxurious modern house. Nighttime now. Inside the house, Chandler looks over a balcony to where the front door is heavily guarded. He goes to sit on a couch by a table on which lies the attaché case containing the knife. He gets the weapon out and weighs it in his hand. Key, dressed only in a big shirt, pulls down the blinds and turns down the double bed. She appears in the doorway.
Are you coming to bed?
No, I think I'm going to sleep out here.
Oh. Good night.
She throws herself down, tearful and alone, on the bed. The guards remain vigilant at the front door. Chandler sits back, clutching the attaché case. One of the guards in the ground is chain-lassoed around the neck. Key looks round. Chandler opens his eyes. The guards at the door walk down the front path. Chandler looks over the balcony. Key peeps through the blind.
I just heard something. I don't like this. Let's get out of here.
Chandler pulls open the French window onto the balcony. As he climbs over and labors down a nearby tree, she simply leaps the rail and drops the 10 feet to the ground, landing perfectly. Chandler gets down and turns to see where she is. Stepping back, he bumps into her. They head out. From behind trees and down from the branches come Numspa's gang, wielding weapons. Fu lassoes Chandler's attaché case and brings him down. Ki, seeing another gang member producing a crossbow, backflips over and kicks Fu in the face. Seeing the bowman taking aim, Key makes a vertical 12-foot leap onto the bough of a tree. Chandler whacks one of his assailants with the attaché case. She leaps back down and overpowers the bowman and Fu. The ugly guard runs off in pursuit of Chandler. She runs after the pair of them. Chandler spots Sado materializing. Sado reappears by the bowman, from whom he takes the weapon. Chandler fights with the ugly guard, who succeeds in chopping through the chain of the attaché case. Sado takes aim with the crossbow. Seeing him doing so, Key front flips towards Chandler, getting to him just in time to take the crossbow bolt in the back. Smiling almost imperceptibly, Sado walks away with his sidekicks carrying the attaché case. Chandler's eyes fill with sadness as he holds Key's drooping body.
I did not spend the night with you to obligate you. Night with you because I love you.
She swoons. Chandler stands with the Chinese pharmacist over her still body laid out in the cellar.
She is beyond this world of pain.
You can save her. The golden child can bring her back as long as sunlight still shines on her body.
No more magic and no more riddles, all right? She's dead!
Chandler wrenches away the screen, revealing the smoking seer to be half woman, half serpent.
You are the chosen one. You will find the child. You have until nightfall to find the child. Sardo cannot kill him until dark.
In the country house, the ugly guard fingers a pile of dead butterflies. He tosses one towards the cage, but it falls short. His second throw gets one in. The golden child magically revives it with the touch of his fingertip, to the utter delight of the guard. The guard ill-advisedly reaches for the butterfly on the floor by the cage, enabling the boy to touch his hand with his magic finger. A grin spreads across the man's craggy features. The boy watches him as he crosses to the bowl of tainted oatmeal and kicks it away. Chandler drives his beaten-up station wagon, his mind full of thoughts of the dead girl who lies under gauze in the pharmacy cellar. The parakeet lands in a tree above the car. Chandler turns off the road to follow it. The bird flies up a long track. Chandler pulls up in sight of the large country house. He walks up to the ornate metal gates. He climbs up to the stone balustrade of the terrace. The parakeet perches on the guttering. Vaulting the balustrade, Chandler now hugs the wall of the house, peering in through one of the full-length ground floor windows. He enters the house. The long corridor is full of items of furniture shrouded in dust sheets. He spots the knife in a side room and goes to pick it up. He begins to stealthily climb the stairs. On the landing stands Fu, swishing his chain lasso. Chandler turns in time to grab the chain, lasso it round a pillar, and cause Fu to fall into the stairwell, strangling himself with his own chain. Chandler throws him a "you really should have known better" look. He heads off along the corridor. He spins around to find the crossbowman taking aim at him. About to pull the trigger, the man is suddenly pounced on by the ugly guard, who wrenches his neck. Chandler mimes compliance and then follows the ugly guard, who beckons him forward. The boy in the cage turns as he hears the door open. Chandler looks around at the occult scrawls on the walls. The boy gazes up at him.
We're gonna get you out of here, okay?
Chandler and the guards strain to prise open the spring mechanism of the cage. The boy squeezes out, and they head towards the door.
Hey, where's your boss? You keep an eye on the kid, don't worry about nothing. I'm the chosen one. This isn't gonna take too long.
Chandler opens a door to confront Sardo.
My dear sweet brother Noopsie!
Chandler looks on in horror as flames shoot up around Sardo and he transforms from smooth villain into hideous demon.
I can see you're busy right now.
Come back some other time.
Chandler dashes out, grabbing the boy's hand and making for his car.
There are no keys in the car!
There are no keys!
Oh, come on.
Come on, come on, come on!
The boy calmly touches Chandler's hand.
Everything's gonna be okay.
I know.
Well, fasten your seatbelt, kid.
The child makes the seatbelts attach themselves. Chandler speeds off. The winged demon smashes through a huge aureole window in pursuit. Chandler drives at top speed.
Somebody give you a Valium or what? This kind of thing must happen live where you're from. I feel like I'm a shit on myself.
The demon lands on and rips through the car roof. Chandler speeds away. A telegraph pole falls in the path of the speeding car. Chandler runs with the boy into some kind of derelict plant. The boy gets through the gate, but Chandler struggles.
Hey! Hey, Goldie! You ain't gonna help me with the chain, just gonna keep running, right?
The boy thinks hard, and the padlock chain expands to allow Chandler through. The demon swoops over the derelict plant and knocks the top story off it. Inside, the boy starts up the rungs of a fixed ladder leading to the roof. The demon makes a crash landing, then wrenches away the metal gates to the plant. All wings, horn, and teeth, the demon strides into the plant room. It hurls an iron bar at Chandler. It smashes lengths of girder around with such force that chunks of the concrete structure begin to fall inwards. The demon gives Chandler a sideswipe with one wing, causing him to drop the dagger. As huge slabs of concrete cascade down, crushing the demon, Chandler and the boy make their getaway up the fixed ladder. They escape through a hatch onto the roof. They get away from the plant just before it disappears beneath a landslide. Chandler throws the boy into the car and jams his foot to the floor. The evening sun glows red over LA. Key lies beneath her gauze in the pharmacy cellar. The car races through the gathering dusk and screeches to a halt in front of the pharmacy. Chandler and the boy, hand in hand, run down into the cellar. Rays of sunshine penetrate through pavement lights. Demon, horribly wounded, surges up through the floor. Clutching the dagger, it makes for Chandler. It makes to stab him, but the blade is deflected by the necklace he was conned into buying by the legless abbot in Kathmandu. As the demon goes to retrieve the knife, the boy shuts his eyes in concentration. The knife slides across the floor to Chandler. The demon roars and rages. Chandler smiles as he wraps his hand around the hilt of the knife. He lunges at the demon. A single blow to the heart causes the demon to explode and vanish. The boy holds out his extended palm to Chandler. Chandler looks down at the still body of Key, and then up at what appears to be the last ray of the day's sunshine. The boy pushes up her foot till it catches the sun, and then holds his finger to her toe. Chandler peers down to see signs of life returning to Key's face. Smiling, he pulls back the gauze. She opens her eyes. She smiles back. He strokes her hair, then bends to kiss her. The golden child raises his thumb. Chandler smiles back in delight. The pair walk close together with the boy close at hand.
How long are you going to be?
About 2 weeks.
Okay, so you drop the kid off and then you come back.
Yes.
Good. Listen, you. I bought this for you. okay? You put that on, and you don't have to worry about none other kids messing with your head while you're here. Good? Good. You don't want to go to bed with a big on your head.
The parakeet lands on the boy's shoulder.
Hey, that is a cool trick. Did you ever think about going in the show business? Because I could be your partner. I throw a rock at you, you make it float off and hit the wall. Standing ovations all over the place. You ever hear Ed McMahon's Star Search? Do they have Star Search in Tibet? Probably not. Probably have Food Search.
But you know what we could do? We could all go on Star Search, right? And we could give the audience rocks and let them throw them at you. And then you can move your hand and make them all hit Ed McMahon. Hard.
The end.